Welcome to episode 91, which is part two of a two-part series with Jenny, a sexual health education teacher from the Central Okanagan Public School District. As a pelvic health physiotherapist treating predominantly adults who are quite often learning about their intimate bodily functions for the first time in our sessions, I commonly hear, "Wow, this information is so helpful. Why don't we learn about this in our basic schooling? And my parents never talked to me about this stuff. How do I teach my kids about this?" I've asked Jenny to join me to help all of us understand what our kids are learning in elementary, middle, and high school. If you haven't already, I strongly encourage you to listen to part one, which is episode 90, and in there, you will hear what the elementary year's sexual health curriculum involves. In this episode, we'll discuss the middle and high school curriculum that expands on puberty, healthy versus unhealthy relationships, consent, sexual decision making, contraception, and prevention of sexually transmitted infections. As we all know, the easy access to the internet and social media is exposing kids to so much more than most of us were. We hope this conversation not only helps bring you up to speed on what the younger generation is learning about the topics we tend to avoid, and get your wheels spinning on how to enhance their learning at home. I'll be right back with Jenny Rabinovich. Listeners, have you ever heard of the benefits of using a high-quality compression garment during pregnancy, after birth, or to address feelings of vulnerability, maybe in your tummy, or heaviness in your undercarriage? Did you know the evidence tells us that using these garments can decrease pain, ease apprehension, and increase the ability to move with comfort in your day if you have these unwanted symptoms? I'm grateful to have SRC Health as a podcast sponsor, and I want to take the time to tell you about their high-quality products. Using a revolutionary fabric created by medical professionals, SRC has designed a line of compression shorts and leggings that are made to support your back, tummy, and pelvis in pregnancy, or help you feel less pain and more confident with movement as you recover after pelvic surgery or birth. Their products have helped many for symptoms like incontinence, diastasis, and prolapse. I also have to add their customer service is like no other because they stand behind their products. Check out their full line. Head to their website, www.srchealth, and enter the code THEPELVICFLOORPROJECT, all capital letters, at the checkout because you'll get 10% off. Don't your mind and body deserve the support? All right, Jenny, let's do episode two here. And so in the first episode, we talked about more elementary school or elementary aged kids and just what you're teaching or what your team is teaching. I wonder if, just in case people are hopping onto this episode without listening to the first one, will you just do a quick introduction of who you are, and then we'll move on to middle and high school aged kids.
Sure. My name is Jenny Rabinovich, and I am a sexual health educator with School District 23 for the past 19 years. And we've been teaching kids grade 4 to grade 11 throughout that whole time. So, yeah.
That's great. And so like I mentioned in the first episode, we went through those elementary ages. And so if we kind of come up to, you know, in grade 6, you were talking a little bit about, I think if I remember correctly, actually, maybe you refresh because I might not get this right. But in grade 6, talking a little bit more about pregnancy, I think, trimesters of mm-hmm. pregnancy, you talk a little bit about birth.
Yeah, a little bit.
Talking about periods, I think you said that you kind of extend that discussion throughout the years. You know, you just build on everything, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So I was just with grade sevens yesterday. I kind of tell them that, you know, this is the transition year between, you know, all the puberty stuff and then things that we're going to be talking with you about in the older grades. So grade seven, we do a final lesson on puberty. Like we teach four different lessons to them. But then we also get into the topic of sexual harassment and appropriate behaviors, which leads into consent. We talk about online safety, which is a huge topic. There's lots going on in the world right now in terms of youth and online safety. And then We also do sort of an introduction to disease and disease prevention, sort of just touching on sexually transmitted diseases a little bit, because they will have in grade six, you know, a lot of them remember getting vaccinations, right? And so we kind of touch on the fact that two of the vaccinations they got in grade six were for sexually transmitted infections. And then we kind of, you know, and that kind of transitions to the older stuff. So
will you talk a little bit more then, like in grade seven, like, will you elaborate a little bit more just because it's fresh in your head, maybe on what you taught yesterday? Like what other, like what are the, some of the specifics of what they're learning?
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, yesterday we talked about boundaries and sexual harassment because it's not uncommon that, you know, we get calls from administration just saying, hey, there's some behaviors happening and we want to, you know, obviously we are addressing those behaviors specifically, but I think they need to hear it from other adults as well. And so, you know, it's things like, you know, you don't have the right to touch other people's bodies. So when we talk about sexual harassment, it can be things that are verbal, it can be written things, whether it be, you know, graffiti or online, it can also be things involving touch. So a lot of the verbal stuff is, you know, homophobic, transphobic comments that are said quite often, very often. It's, you know, catcalling, it's, you know, kids thinking it's funny to pants each other, you know, like pull each other's pants down as a prank or a joke, and how that can feel and how embarrassing that might be, even if it's your friend. You know, it's, what else? I mean, I'm just trying to think of all the different things. Making jokes about sexual assault. Another big thing is commenting about people's bodies, you know, the shape of bodies, someone's bum, someone's breasts, someone's penis. That's a lot of things like, and the kids, you know, they kind of, a lot of them have heard all that stuff, right? So they just need to know that it's not appropriate moving forward.
I remember I was an early developer and I was so shy. And so, and I did the fact that I was changing early, I was just mortified. And I remember some of those comments, and they were sometimes from friends. And I don't think they necessarily meant to hurt my feelings, but just commenting. But I was very sensitive to that kind of thing. And so I think, like, I noticed that I, you know, whether it be talking with my kids or whatever, just all bodies are different and some people are proud of differences, but you don't know that. Like, you can't assume that people are proud of differences. Sometimes people are very shy about differences. And so just being mindful of like what you say out loud, right? And yeah, rather maybe come home and ask mom and dad, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And I mean, I think, you know, going through puberty and having your body change is hard enough. I think kids are hard enough on themselves. They don't need to hear comments from other kids, right? And I don't think they realize, like, even within their friends, how hurtful they might be being, even though they think that they're kidding and joking. Because I've had kids come after class, you know, pretty upset about things that friends have said. Could be from as, you know, could be breast size. It could be, you know, joking that they're the shortest one in the school, right? Because people get insecure about height sometimes too. So, yeah.
What else, if you can remember off the top of your head, like in grade seven, like what other kinds of things are you expanding on when it comes to things like puberty or, you know, some of the other things that you mentioned?
Puberty talks, you know, as we, I mean, obviously we start with puberty in grade four, but as they start getting to the point where more and more of them are going through it, I think a lot of them at that point, you know, they know the changes that are supposed to happen. They kind of want to know what's normal. And then, you know, we talk a little bit more about shaving, you know, that, you know, that's a choice. You don't ever have to, and maybe how to do that. We talk lots of questions, I think, about periods and tampon use, menstrual cups, how do I use a tampon? Because there's, you know, just the thought for a lot of people who get periods to put something in their body, you know, they're nervous about it. They think it's going to hurt or different things like that. So just trying to like calm them, show them the different options, talk about how they're used. And honestly, the boys are just as fascinated as the girls in the class. So,
So do you find usually your method of delivery is you have some time in the class to kind of present information? And then I know you said in the last episode that there's an anonymous question box. So would you say you're generally presenting some of the basics and then they submit their questions beforehand or after? Or how does that work?
You know, typically, because we see them four separate times, usually with a, you know, it's like a see them and then a day where they don't, and like every other day. Okay. And then they definitely can ask questions in class, and quite a few of them will, but there's always the ones that are shy that don't. So we don't do our anonymous questions till the very end, which I know is not ideal. But, you know, one grade seven class I had the other day, of a class of maybe I think 25 kids, I had 70 questions come in.
Wow.
Lots about bodies. Lots, I mean, some are just not always questions. Some could be comments, like they appreciate getting the information. They're thankful that, you know, they've been given the information. Cause again, some are talking at home, some aren't. But yeah, like, just a lot of curiosity at grade seven. Yeah. And they also hear stuff, right? So I know there's families that choose to teach the topic at home, and that's fair enough. Like, it's not an opt out program. It's an opt to teach in an alternate delivery. So we will provide families with material to go through the same content at home, but we encourage people to stay in just because even if their child is not in the class, they're going to hear the kids talking. And we would rather hear it from us than secondhand from somebody else who maybe like didn't get it correct when they were trying to explain it to somebody. Do you know what I mean?
So it sounds like at this stage, they're mostly interested in their changing body. Most of their questions are more around that. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they also hear about sex, right?
Okay.
They do, because they're all online. I mean, the majority of them are on Snapchat, they're on Instagram, they're on TikTok. They see stuff, they hear stuff. And that's worrisome. Like, I mean, grade sevens, you know, they're starting to turn 13, but you have to be 13 to be on social media. I mean, even to be honest, a grade five class I was just in, I would say 80% of them are on social media.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're just exposed to things. Like, I mean, in my class of grade fives, I actually had about four students who said, and they didn't know where it came from, because again, you know, they could have people following them on social media that they don't even know who they are, but they were sent nudes. And I'm like, a 10-year-old, like, it just breaks my heart. And I don't know that parents, some parents for sure realize, you know, what's out there, but I think some people think that that stuff's not going to happen because they're, you know, they're just talking with their friends. But yeah, I don't know. So that stuff is, you know, really important to talk about with your kids. Some kids will have questions on that too. Yeah.
I just had a couple examples of that. I was talking with a friend who has a daughter around my daughter's age. And she said she'll never guess what some of the parents are talking about, that a group of them, one of the girls was teaching them about blowjobs. This was in grade five. And so one of the girls brought it up to her mom, and the mom said, like, I was very thankful I was like in the dark driving, because when she asked me from the back seat, I was like, whoa. Like, it was her older child and was not prepared for that. But was just like, I think we get caught off guard as parents sometimes, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to say here. Or, you know, like, where are you hearing this? But again, like, you can't prevent them from hearing things, right?
No.
And so I think it sounds like that mom had a good answer. Just like, there's going to be lots of things that come up, and lots of things are going to sound really gross or weird to you initially, but please keep asking me questions and just like, kind of keep an open mind with the things you hear, because you're going to feel different ways about different things as you get older.
Absolutely.
Kind of what she said. And just trying to just like, keep talking to me, keep asking me, because I don't know the information that other girl has or what have you.
Yeah. No, and that's then, really good advice. Like, cause yeah. And it's so important. Like, and I think it sounds like she did the right thing. Like she, like, you know, oftentimes if kids tell their parents or they ask them, you know, about what a blowjob is, like some parents might freak out or react, and then kids would be then maybe less likely to come to their parents. So it sounds like she kept really calm and just was matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for letting me know. The other example was a parent of a grade 8 kid who she said, and I can see myself being like this too, but just like no social media account or, you know, only texting with your friends until you're this age. You know, she was just very much like, I don't like it. And I want him to mature before he's involved in this. And she said, great kid. But I think I didn't realize as a parent, he was getting left out from his friends because he wasn't on social media. And she said, yeah. I don't understand why they can't text, but he explained to me that we don't text mom like this. Like people Snapchat or they DM one another or whatever. So she said, basically at one point he came to me and had to say, like, mom, I made a mistake and I found a way to create an account and I am being kind of like whatever, held hostage or something by this person who's saying that they photoshopped pictures of him, like putting his face on a naked body. And she's like, this isn't me, mom. And she's like, I see that that's not you, but she's like, I didn't know what to do about it. But she said, thank you so much for telling me. We phoned the police and everything, but she said it made me realize like, I can't just say no social media because they find a way to do it. And she said, it's basically just involved a lot of conversation since then and helping our kids evaluate things or critically think, I guess.
And I think it's really important to every, like, maybe once a week go through your kids' phones, right? Like, just see what they're doing, go in their apps, like, and you have a right to do that. You know, your job is to keep them safe, right, and help them make good decisions. But what you just described, that example I was just reading about in the news, just because the people who are out there online, like sextortion is a huge thing right now. I don't know if you've read about that, but they're, you know, they would prey on youth and hoping that they would send a nude when you develop a relationship, and then they would blackmail them. But now they don't even necessarily need that. They're just using the face and putting it on. Yeah. So it's really, like, I've been trying to tell these kids, like, you might just think, you know, this is an innocent conversation. Like, do not give them anything that they could use.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm sure that takes up a lot of your time now. I'm sure you've had to kind of adjust your, let's call it, curriculum a bit because times are changing so much. So I'm sure it's changed how you deliver things or how you talk about things.
Yeah. I don't know if this is maybe helpful for some families, but the Canadian Centre for Child Protection has a tip line, basically. It's called cybertip.ca. And there's another one that they have. So CyberTip basically is a place where if any youth have had any people talk sexual to them, now it could be because, like, a lot of the kids too, if they're playing video games online, like Fortnite, if they have a microphone on, there's quite a few kids, like, you'll be playing with somebody and this, you know, this person that they've never met, you're able to talk with them as you're playing with them, which I made a rule in my house. I'm like, you know, hey, if you're going to do that, you are not having your microphone on. Like, there is absolutely, you are not talking with someone that you've never met before. Right. Because a lot of kids are saying that they're getting sexualized messages that way. They could be getting them through Snapchat, Instagram, whatever it is. So anytime something, there's some sort of creepy behavior or sexualized thing being said towards youth, you report it to cybertip.ca. And then there's another one called needhelpnow.ca, which is also the Canadian Centre for Child Protection. So needhelpnow.ca is a place that if people have got photos out there that they don't want online, maybe it's an embarrassing picture that a friend put out there that now is gone forever, or maybe it's one of those things that you said where, you know, the face is on something else. So Need Help Now will help people get things taken down. Yeah.
And I always feel like it's always relevant to kind of like tie this back to like, why is this relevant to my work as a pelvic health physio? The last episode that just came out this week was all about sexual trauma. Because I see people come in as adults that maybe it's pain with intercourse. I'm having a hard time having a pleasurable relationship with my partner. I have pain in my pelvis. And quite often, all of those symptoms have a story. Like people have a story that contributes to the reason their body reacts a certain way.
Yeah.
And always things like this come up. Like when I was a child, I had sexual trauma, or, you know, I'm just going to, another example was, a girl that was pregnant who, started to feel very emotional. Like I'm actually feeling very emotional about like having to spread my legs and have a baby, birth a baby. All of a sudden some thoughts about school are coming up when I injured myself on a playground and my teacher insisted on looking. Like just all sorts of things come up. My teacher insisted on looking when I hurt myself on the playground. And so, she's like, I've never thought about being able to say no to like an authority or something like that. And so anyways, my point being is that there's a reason we talk to our kids about this and a reason why we educate them that it's their body and they don't have to say yes to certain things, because this isn't going to just be a, like a blip in time quite often, or just one episode that doesn't maybe have lasting effects, right?
Yeah.
So I listen absolutely to that and think, wow, how many of these stories have I heard?
Yeah.
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 What about, so I'm curious to know, I think some of the things off the top of my head are, what do you, like, let's say, so we're kind of blending middle years here, right? And so is there anything else? I have a couple things, but I just want to let you start, Jenny, first with, you know, we've talked a little bit about changing bodies, periods, like growing the information. I'm sure at the beginning, quite often in elementary school, when you're talking about periods, they're learning about pads. You know, we're putting together a little, their package with pads in it. But as you mentioned, as they get older, sometimes they want different options like tampons, menstrual cups, the discs, like they're hearing about so many different things. You mentioned that, how do you show them how to use those actually? Do you just describe it, or do you have a video, or how are girls learning to use those products? Because that is one thing that I remember struggling with myself, but a lot of adults still have a problem with, I don't even understand the anatomy and where I'm supposed to put this. You guys teach that?
Yeah. I mean, we start with a diagram of, you know, because obviously there's, you know, a few openings down in the vulva, right? So they need to know which opening. And we talk about how it's really like, just don't, just realize that it can be really tricky to figure out where it's supposed to go initially, and to give yourself, you know, cut yourself some slack, basically. If you can't figure it out the first time, that's really normal. I have lots of kids who will come to me saying, I don't know where it goes. Right. So we have a diagram. We usually will have, you know, a video talking about the different options, but, with menstrual cups, we have like a little, video that just talks about how to maybe fold it to get it in properly, and how to make sure that it seals properly. And then we will usually do a demonstration. Like we'll talk about the, you know, talk about that the vagina's, you know, slightly angled up towards the back, that it's not straight up and down in the body, that it's, you know, that the vagina, basically like the opening of the vagina, you'll have some feeling there and sort of more towards the top. But once it's inserted properly, that it's sort of, you're probably not going to feel it in there. So not only do we show, but in, I would say grade six, we have sort of some containers, we've got pads, panty liners, we've got period underwear there, we've got regular underwear. We've got a tampon in there, and there is a bit of time that, and we say it's optional. People don't have to do it if they're not comfortable, but if they would like, they can come and take a look at it, kind of feel the stuff themselves, practice putting a pad in if they want, or so we give them a chance to kind of just explore and figure out what they look like. And we show like the tampon applicator and how there's cardboard, plastic, no applicators, there's different options. So we kind of go through all of that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And that's one thing I find a lot of parents will ask me, they'll maybe just kind of on a side note, they're in to see me. And then they'll say, can I just ask you a side note on, okay, my daughter is interested in trying this. Can you just show me how to do that? Or can you, and I have like a menstrual cup in the clinic and I have tampons and just to show, like I might demonstrate like just with my model or something like that, like how to actually put it in. Because I think a lot of parents don't even know, like you forget what it was like to learn, but that's normal for, you know, to not know how to put that in your vagina, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Can you expand a little bit on, I know we talked about this a little bit with the elementary school, but then what about the ones that are experiencing a lot of painful periods? Because this is something that I definitely see moving forward to adulthood, whether someone has endometriosis or again, they just describe, oh my gosh, I've always had horrendous periods. I've just been told that's normal. It's actually not normal to have a lot of pain with your periods. Like it's normal to have some discomfort, but to have that much pain, the number of people think that that's just normal. What are the messages that you're giving right now about painful periods?
Well, you know, given the fact that I'm not a nurse or, you know, medically trained, we'll usually talk about the fact that, you know, it definitely can happen for some people. And we mentioned that, you know, about 1 in 10 people will end up with endometriosis. So, you know, we talk about, you know, with menstrual cramps, you know, you can use heat, you can use, you know, have a warm bath, exercise, all of those things are going to help. But there's going to be some people who are exceptions to that, who, you know, the next step might be talking to a parent, taking some pain medication like Advil, Tylenol, something like that. And then if Advil and Tylenol isn't working and the pain is so bad, you're heavy bleeding, you can't even function because the pain is excruciating, you might be throwing up from a period, then see a doctor. And then we talk in the, you know, basically grade 9-10 about, you know, birth control and how some of them are used to help with period symptoms.
And you know, one thing I see is that, you know, anyone that has long-standing pain, especially cyclical pain that keeps coming back, like with a period, quite often that starts turning into other things. Like maybe they start feeling like they have the symptoms of a UTI, like a bladder infection without actually having a bladder infection, or that turns into having pain with intercourse, or just generalized pelvic pain or back pain. Like a lot of these, when you're trying to figure out, and when I'm trying to figure out an adult, why does this person have longstanding back pain? Or what are the reasons this person might have pain with intercourse or these symptoms of a frequent UTI? Then I would say, what are your periods like? Oh, if they've always been, oh my gosh, they've always been horrible, then that tells me that they've had a lot of cyclical pain that quite often can be addressed or investigated long before, you know. I think we just tend to chalk it up to that's normal, that's normal, I have bad luck. But it can be a lot of different things.
Yeah. So what would you do for someone, like if they are coming to you with that?
Well, do you know what? Sometimes, and it's so many different reasons because I have so many other questions too. It might be whenever someone has that much pain, I know that there's lots of complex reasons that pain can be exacerbated. Like some of these teens or kids will have anxiety or depression or mental health considerations that are exacerbating. They're maybe not very active. They tend to, when they have pain, do less. Maybe they, some of them are high level athletes with that, and the way that they exercise or engage their muscles can be contributing to more tension. Quite often that would be when, if they're having period pains over and over again, I think that's right. I would send them to their physician. And I think we're doing a better job now of not just dismissing that all the time, like you said, whether it be birth control or other different methods, but sometimes just some education, because quite often it's just they kind of hunker down, fetal position, don't do anything, and they don't understand all the things besides medications that can help them as well. I am seeing a lot of like anxiety exacerbate a lot of pain and a lot of symptoms. And another thing too, what do you guys talk about? Is there any language in those middle years about like bladder infections, peeing, constipation? Like, does any of that, or is that more just, do you talk a little bit more about that with the digestive system and everything in the elementary years? Does any of that come into middle
probably
years?
I do talk about how, like, you know, premenstrual syndrome, how it can affect our digestive system, and how it's normal. And this is what I got from talking with the doctor, is that it's normal to experience constipation prior to. But we don't go into a lot of depth with it. Sometimes, you know, we remind people, like, if UTIs come up, we remind people about if they have a vulva, like how to wipe properly, right? Stuff like that. But or how some people might pee after having sexual intercourse.
And then I think another big one, and I'm pretty sure we talked about this in the elementary one, but just not lots of times they use a lot of soaps because they want to mask smells, but just explaining that your own system will clean it better than any type of soap. What about bladder leaks? Do you ever find, whether it be middle school or high school, kids are asking questions about bladder leaks? Do you ever get that?
I've never actually had that.
I find that's another one that I see posted anonymously a lot in the kind of Facebook pages, is my teen is leaking or wetting the bed still sometimes. A lot of bladder issues. I think it's important for parents to hear this. A lot of bladder issues in any age is related to constipation because the stool takes up so much space and can put pressure in the pelvis, but lots of kids are constipated. And so they can start having some symptoms of bed wetting. Or that could affect some painful periods sometimes, or just like pressure in there. But yeah, quite often they'll notice more symptoms of, you know, bladder irritation, urge to go leaking. But the other, I think, population that I see bladder leaks, or overactive bladder again, is the anxiety. Like a lot of young adults coming in and just like, I can't live my life without thinking about the toilet, or I'm always going, or I can't hold it all the way. And very commonly I'll always ask about, tell me about your stress levels. What else are you dealing with in life? And a lot of them are like, I'm seeing someone for anxiety, but that's just more of an upregulated system, which sometimes can make our bladder symptoms different. And the athletic population, you see this a lot in especially high impact, right? Trampoline, gymnastics. I think that would be another good one, Jenny. If you were ever able to like invite that and just say, this is something that if any of you are experiencing, you know, any gender, if any of you are experiencing, that's just a sign. It doesn't mean anything's necessarily wrong with you, but that's not a normal symptom to have bladder leaks. And can be a sign that maybe your muscles are too tight and they're fatiguing sometimes when you cough or sneeze or jump. Constipation. Bladder leaks is something that lots of people are just like, I didn't tell anyone that. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, I know. I was just taking notes there, so I'll put that in there because it's important to know, like, what, especially like you dealing with a lot of people, like what are some things that we're not hearing about?
And I think a lot of those kids don't say, or a lot of those, especially gymnasts, track athletes, you know, I've heard, you know, swimmers too can be, but lots of incontinence.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. Because the only thing, you know, and it's not to do with bladder, but the questions that we get usually are about vaginal discharge. And and that wetness, right? But not so much the bladders.
And I think sometimes people don't know actually whether it is urine or discharge. Yes. So sometimes that urine comes out and you don't even feel it coming out. And so yeah. I think it's helpful just, yeah, exactly. Everybody has a different amount of discharge, but just taking note if it's like, does it smell like urine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Any other, besides, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, changing body, periods, you know, consent, sextortion. What else, anything else in middle school that's unique to middle school, what these kids are learning?
Okay. So in our school district, middle schools, a lot of them are 6, 7, 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we do have a couple of 7 to 9s. Okay. So we, like the 9s, the content is going to be like a lot different than, you know, the younger years. So basically starting in like grade 6, still puberty. Grade 7, I talked about what we were going through, like what we kind of covered there. Grade 8 through 11, and we kind of ease them in grade 8. But the general topics are on healthy versus unhealthy dating relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what would be some red flags to know whether or not this is a situation you should stay in. We also encourage them to, you know, not rush into things, ideally. So we talk about getting into sexual decision-making, sexual consent. So what are some things that, you know, people should be considering before entering into a situation like that? That's why we kind of start with the relationship piece, because that we feel like, you know, you shouldn't be making decisions about sex unless you feel like you're safe and comfortable and you can trust this person and talk openly and all these other things. So the sexual decision-making is the readiness, but then also we try to approach it from a sex positive viewpoint, where it's like non-judgmental, but also talking about not just, you know, eliminating risks. So like, we don't want to like be the group that comes in and makes people terrified of sex, right? We want people to understand that with the right conditions and with the right partner, it can be a really like great experience, pleasurable experience, and all of these other things, right? So grade 8, we're talking about relationships, the sexual decision making. We talk about consent and what that looks like and sounds like and what the laws are around sex. And then we also do, the curriculum talks about, you know, giving information about sexually transmitted infections. And so we talk about prevention. Grade 9, if they're at middle school, that's where we're continuing the conversation on healthy relationships, sexual readiness, consent. But then we also go into anatomy in terms of, you know, sexual, how the body, what happens with the body on things like birth control, pleasure. So how does the body respond sexually? We get into looking at and doing a bit of research on different forms of birth control. And we talk about unexpected pregnancies, you know, parenting, like what, you know, if somebody, like just even getting their thoughts and opinions on would they ever want to have a family at someday. And we talk about it. It sounds in a way, probably by the way I'm describing it, that it's very like heterosexist, like we're assuming everyone's straight, but that's not the angle that we come at. It's like anyone could be in these situations. Anyone might need these things. So yeah, but a big theme when we did a review of our program last year that the older kids want is they want more on relationships and more on sexual assault for like victims and how to report and things like that. Yeah.
Would you like, you know, one of the first things we talked about at the beginning of this episode was how you know, some of the things that people are getting harassed about, and you said one of the things can be some like homophobic language. Would you say that now, you know, obviously things are changing fast and we're all learning more about, you know, gender fluidity and gender differences and all sorts of different language. Would you say, and it sounds like you incorporate that into your teaching, would you say that's helping to decrease some of that, let's say, homophobic behavior? Does that make sense? Like, are you fine? Because I guess what I'm trying to get at is I'm also hearing that the more we educate kids about a sex and instead of just saying it's bad, open the conversation, that it leads to less sexual intercourse with kids the more we educate them. Is that this, are you noticing the same with some of the language around different bodies and different genders? Like, is that helping?
You know, I think it definitely gets people to have some empathy for others in terms of like, hey, we should maybe be watching what we're saying and the impact. Because I don't know if you've ever read this report before, but there's a group out of Vancouver called the McCreery Center, and they do this massive adolescent youth health survey. And results just came out from the 2023 spring. They do it every 5 years. They surveyed 38,500 kids and grade 7 through 12. And it found that in terms of sexual orientation, that 75% of students identified as straight and 25% into the other.
That's a big number.
I know it. So I tell kids, and like, so in a class of, let's say there's 24 kids, but six people in your room, right? You're not necessarily going to know who they are, right? So just being aware that, you know, we just need to be kind to people and to be nice to people. And it's not just within your classroom, it's within your school community. Everyone deserves to feel safe and accepted. And so, yes, I mean, I think that we maybe are helping a bit, but we also can't control what the conversations are at home.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so, the other thing I wanted to comment on that you mentioned is that like they learn a little bit about bodies and changes during arousal and things like that. This is a huge one that I find myself talking to adult clients about. Because we always ask as pelvic health physios about, are you sexually active? And you always get like, I'm just going to use females as an example for now, but you always get sometimes like, oh yes, but I don't want to, or something like that. And honestly, once you ask a little bit more, quite often it's like, I just don't feel pleasure, because they might not know how their anatomy works. Like, it's kind of like, the clitoris is where you're going to feel most arousal as a woman. And if your partner doesn't know that, and you don't even know that, you might not be getting the best bang for your buck here. And so I spend a lot of time with adults showing them on a pelvic model, the pleasurable areas and how that works and how, like, what foreplay does and how blood flow is affected and why maybe your husband's heart condition is affecting his erectile dysfunction. And, you know, just being able to explain to people, because otherwise sometimes it's just like, oh my gosh, sex is embarrassing. We don't talk about sex and we're just not having it. And so I think a lot of that education starts to be like, oh my God, I've been missing out on all of these years of understanding my anatomy. And I can't imagine if most adults don't understand their anatomy, how are you going to talk to your kids about it? Or, you know, or like, I can't, that is such a hard topic to bring up to your parents. So I think that's great that you're bringing it up, because the number of people, men and women, that see themselves as faulty, or, you know, again, I see a lot of men too with erectile dysfunction, and they just don't understand that their stress is is contributing. So I think just like starting these conversations, because I think we're really quick to be like, so, well, my body doesn't work as well, therefore I'm not going to be as, you know, as sexually interested or what have you.
Yeah. So, well, and even we were talking with Dr. Tisha Morgan, who I think I'd mentioned before to you, but she's a sex therapist in town, but she was saying too, like, just not only is the brain so powerful in how we are going to experience sex, but it's also things that are maybe not within our control, like if we're on anxiety or depression medications can impact that, or even ADHD medications can impact that, right? So letting people know. And there was also, she also talked about a study that said that for people with a penis, that when they're having sex, there is the more they liked their partner, okay? So if they liked their partner, like just, it was just, they were so excited to be with this person and, you know, didn't want to let them down. And they were, if they are worried that, you know, they want everything to go perfectly with this person, the anxiety of it will make it, you know, more difficult for them to get an erection. And so just the importance of communication with partners, like, you know, hey, when I'm really nervous, this might happen. Because she said, if people don't talk, then what happens is, you know, if that person can't get an erection, the other person then thinks there's something wrong with them, mm-hmm. right? You know, maybe Absolutely. They don't find me attraction. Maybe they don't like me the way I thought they did. Right. So it just, you know, kind of, it all builds. Yeah.
Yes. And another thing that was on my mind from what you said, and you already mentioned it, I just want to elaborate more, is the differences in bodies. Like, I see adults come in and say things like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry I didn't shave, or I'm sorry I didn't groom. I'm like, I don't care. I mean, some people do and some people don't. Or the number of people that say, do I look normal down there? I'm like, oh my gosh, normal. What does normal mean? I mean, every single vulva I look at is going to look different. But I've heard so many people, let's talk about kind of like the vulva to start with, the number of people that have had, for example, labiaplasty, like modifications to their labia because they heard that it didn't look right. Or when they look online or when they see pornography, that's not how they look. So they assume they're wrong. My penis is smaller than the people on TV. My penis hangs to the right instead of central. Like, all of that stuff is...
I know.
You know, is people live in their own worlds about that. And I always say one of the things I'm thankful for my job is I have the perspective. I see so many differences. So it makes me feel normal, quote unquote. Yeah. I'm using that like in quotes. Number of people that just go around kind of having shame around their body because it doesn't look like what they see. So I'm curious to know what's the teaching around all of that?
We do talk about the impact of pornography, because the number one question I would say that all four sexual health teachers in our district get is around penis size. Is my penis, what is the average size? And we're starting in probably sometimes grade six, but grade seven and up every year. What's the average size? How big is it supposed to be this age? Right? Like, there's just so many. Oh, and not as common as penis size question would be about removing pubic hair. Do I need
and
to shave?
Am I supposed to? Is that what their question is? Am I supposed to?
Yeah, should I be shaving? Yeah, that kind of stuff. So, but pornography, I mean, it's so easy for kids to access, right? And we talk about, number one, obviously, is age, right? They're not supposed to be viewing it until they're 18 or older. Legally, right? Second, though, is all the unrealistic ideas that they're getting about their bodies and also the bodies of people that they might be in relationships with, right? So not only will males be insecure about possibly their penis size, but now if whoever they're going to be with sexually has been also watching porn, they might be having unrealistic ideas about how their partner's body is supposed to look, right? And yeah, there's lots of, yeah, just, so there's that piece. It's the roles of, you know, imbalance and power in relationships as well. Just how pornography, especially if people are viewing pornography when they're masturbating, basically is training their brain to only become aroused when they're viewing pornography, because it's just creating these neural pathways, as opposed to now we're in real life with this person and I don't even, where do I begin, right? Because I'm going to have a harder time now because my brain has been trained for this, mm-hmm. right? So we talk about all of these effects of pornography. It's, you know, ideally we are kind of saying, hey, if people are going to masturbate, Use your mind. You like fantasize. Don't be on that. Like, we don't want people, and we're not talking about this with the younger kids, you know, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, it's older kids, but you know, just try to stay off of that for your own the health of your own sex life, basically, ideally, until you have experienced your own relationships in that way, right? And know that this is purely just made for entertainment. It's not reality.
I'm curious to know, like, I was talking with some other parents the other day just about what our kids were learning in school, and they have a daughter who comes home and shares everything, and I just have the complete opposite. And so I think if I brought things up, I'd get a little bit more communication, but I don't necessarily know, like, unless I miss things, Jenny, but yeah. How, like, do you send home something saying this is what your kid's learning today? Or how does that parent know? Because if we want to open that conversation and expand a little bit, does that go home to the parents?
So before we come, we send a letter home. Hey, these are the topics that we are going to cover this year. And it's kind of looking at the learning outcomes, and talking a little bit about what we're teaching. We also have a disclosure in there that says that, you know, although these are the topics, we can't control what is going to be brought up within the anonymous question period. So, you know, and we answer things that are age appropriate. Like if somebody in grade 5 is asking me about a blowjob, I'm not going to, you know, answer that out loud, because the majority of, even if one person has heard it, the majority of the kids are just so not ready to hear that.
Yes.
Anyways, afterwards, grade 4 and grade 5, we send home, you know, things to the parents. Okay. Grade 6, grade 7, grade 8, we have booklets that we send with the kids as follow-up, mostly on, you know, safety, boundaries. The grade 8 one talks about like age of consent, that kind of stuff, but it's not, you know, going to the parents. It's for the kids, right? We find at the older grades, if we were to give something to the kids directly to give to their parents, they're not going to give it to them. No, it won't come home. Yeah. And we've talked about, you know, what can we send home afterwards? Like, we encourage, sometimes we'll say to the teachers in the classroom, hey, I think it would be a really good idea if you can send home an email to parents saying, hey, this is what was brought up in class today. Have a conversation with your kids. Yeah. So there's not a specific thing that we're sending home.
It's interesting. Yeah. Cause again, like I listened to this, I'm like, oh, so I wouldn't have a clue that this is what they're learning. I mean, my oldest is only in grade 5, so it hasn't covered a lot of this yet, but I just don't see her coming home saying, Mom, this is what I learned today. And yeah. If I say, what did you learn? No, nothing. Or, you know, so
I know.
I can see that being a bit of a disconnect, because I mean, parents, you know, it's hard to, I would just want to know where to meet them. Do you know what I mean? What did you talk about today while it's fresh?
Yeah. Like, we have, like, let's, for example, in grade 8, like, we do this one activity, like for the dating relationships thing. So we kind of have, them, it's almost set up like a bingo card. Like, you know, they've got all these different traits, healthy and unhealthy, and they go through, it's like, what would you eliminate from this? What do you think is really important? You know, what would be sort of like a must have versus, hey, this is kind of a nice little bonus. Like, they're good looking, but hey, are they all, anyway, so we kind of analyze all these traits. They write down some things. And then we tell them, if they take that home and get their parents to sign and comment about the choices that they made, if they bring it back, you know, we have these sexual health kind of fun stickers that the kids love. So we try to give incentives for them to be having conversations at home as well. Good. Yeah.
I know you had sent me at one point from that Mercury's health survey, a stat about, survey from 2018 showed that the average across those grades that have a sexual experience is 20%.
Okay. Ooh, so, it went down.
Yeah. So will you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have like the very rough, like the results came out. We haven't seen more detailed reports, which sometimes they will hand those out, like give those out a little bit later. But basically, the average, the average across the five grades, grade 7 through 12, that was having sex in 2018 was 20%, and now it is 16%.
Wow,
So
that's a pretty big jump.
it's the lowest it's been in the 20 years that they've been doing that survey. Yeah, the other stat, because in that sexual activity rate, it's any type of sex would be lumped in that, except for not oral sex and not masturbation. And so I don't know what the masturbation stat, but oral sex stat usually always has been like, several percent higher than the sexual act, like intercourse or any other type of sex rate. But that even came down drastically. It used to be at like 24%, and now it's dropped to 17%. So I think there's like less in-person stuff going on and more online, where they feel it's almost safer, but yet now there's risks, right?
That's what I saw that somewhere, and I actually can't remember, is that they're sexting more. Like they're, it's just more like you said, non-personal contact, which I can see. It's like, I'm sure at first you'd be like, yes, that's a great that it's coming down and they're waiting till they're a little bit older. But yeah, like you said, maybe more risk in other ways, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm just trying to think of some other things. Actually, one thing that I want to point out for, because a lot of times I think I'm having more and more clients say, can my daughter come see you? And I'll give a couple examples. One of them was, she said, I'm noticing my daughter spending a lot of time on the toilet. There must be something, because she had learned a lot. This mom had learned a lot about her pelvic floor. And she's like, I can see that that's not a good habit. Like she has some pain with bowel movement. She's having some hemorrhoids. Can my daughter come see you? And I always make sure, want people to know, like, just because you see a pelvic floor physio doesn't mean we do an internal exam. So I
Okay.
think a lot of times parents are like, does that mean you have to do an internal exam on my child? No. We obviously there is the odd time. It's always with a parent's consent, but like, would I ever assume that I'm going to do that with a child or a teen? No. A lot of education, sometimes just showing models and pictures, but this particular girl was very active at the gym. She liked to work out, and just in talking with her, she was just the way she was coordinating her abdominals. A lot of people think they're supposed to hold their abs tight all the time or hold their core tight all the time,
Yeah.
but when you hold your core tight all the time, you create a lot of tension down in your pelvic floor. Like there needs to be something below there that also tightens. So I think that's where sometimes the active or athletic population. But again, I'm just trying to give an example of. Parents are starting to see, like, oh, this reminds me of my problem. How can I help my child? And I think it's just important to know that we don't just do internal exams. Another thing that I think parents are starting to notice, like a lot of tailbone pain. So,
Really?
yeah. And I think it's partially we sit a lot now as people.
Yeah.
A lot of sitting, like kids slouchy and texting or playing video games. I
Yeah.
also, the typical, I think sometimes this is girls that do this a bit more, especially when they're tall and maybe they have breasts and they don't want to show them. They start to get this like rounded posture where they're
Yeah.
almost trying to hide their height and their breasts. And quite often with that rounded posture, they get quite a bit of a tuck in their pelvis, which kind of just carries their tailbone under into a very flexed position. And man, can that be, it can cause all sorts of issues with bladder incontinence, hemorrhoids, sore tailbone. And so as soon as I see those girls stand up, I'm like, oh, this is going to be part of it. And just talking to them about, tell me a little bit about, how do you feel about your breasts? Do you feel like you have a good bra? Talking a little bit more about posture and ways to stretch into the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else do I see a lot of as kids? Yeah, incontinence or constipation. Like I've had a few moms bring their child in just saying quite often it shows up as leaking, but we end up just, and every parent is different and every parent and child. So I'll tell you what we would do if someone was coming in, usually their parent books the appointment or reaches out and they say, what does this look like? And I always say, well, I take the online history so that they can see some of the questions I'm going to ask, and then usually the parent accompanies the child. But then I always say, "What do you prefer? Would you like to come in together? Would you like to come in alone to the child?" And that's always a decision with the family. Sometimes mom or dad comes in after if there's some take-home messages, but I always say, like, it's confidential information. So anything that you tell me, I'm not going to tell your parents unless you want me to. But sometimes it's just talking about, sometimes the way they eat is creating the constipation, which is creating the incontinence. And anyways, my point just being, I think as parents, helping our kids know, having a bowel movement every couple of days is normal. It shouldn't hurt to poop. You shouldn't leak pee. It shouldn't hurt to put in your tampons. You shouldn't have painful periods. And instead of just saying, like, "Oh, you have bad luck," or "You have constipation because it runs in the family," like, constipation is not helpful. And especially as you get to be an adult and you have issues with prolapse and leaking, and whether it be stool leaking or hemorrhoids, or like that, often that constipation stems from being a child. Yeah. So I think just kind of being a parent, like just helping kids understand what's within normal and what's not, but that there's lots of help out there. Like sometimes we just get into habits. And quite often I use analogies like if a teacher, I said, if you notice a kid's having an issue, it doesn't mean they're a bad kid or they have no hope, but you do have to spend a little extra time with them, or you know that that way that they do something, or that issue they're having with learning, is going to carry forward. And so much of this in our body is such an automatic reflexive system, peeing and pooping, and we're not meant to think about it all the time, but sometimes we get into habits that aren't helpful, that they don't go away as an adult. Yeah.
Your job must be so
It
fascinating.
is fascinating. You really have to be a detective sometimes to figure out, okay, because it's such an automatic system. I always say, I kind of give the pelvic floor the benefit of the doubt. I mean, it's a group of muscles that's our brain's dealing with, and our brain tells us when to tighten it, for example, cough or sneeze, and it tells us when to relax on the toilet. But anyone in our room, I kind of think something's off with that system, and then I have to help figure out why. Like, is it something you're doing? Is it a habit that you have? Is it a belief that you have? Is it stress related? Is it, diet related? So yeah, it is fascinating. And I just think that a common message from the adult clients is like, "Oh man, why didn't I learn about this as a kid?" Or, "Oh, my parents definitely never talked to me about it." And I think the point of this conversation is our kids are learning more. I think more and more, we don't always hear about it. And that's why I think, like, they're learning more than we know. I also think they're learning more than they used to, right? I'm sure your program's becoming more and more robust as time goes on. Yeah, exactly. And I think that we have to get over some of our awkwardness as parents, and we play a huge role in this too.
Especially with our program, like I think, some of the parent discomfort with how they learned it, or maybe how they didn't learn it, or the shame that it was put on them, you just don't want that carrying forward, right? You just want them to be like open, like talk to me about stuff, like
And that's something that I think another take-home message I would want for people to hear is that maybe you do as a parent think like, "Oh, I don't, I'm seeing little habits my kids have, maybe a little bit of bladder issues or pain with periods, or, they're sitting on the toilet a long time, or I don't know, like any of those things that I would say aren't quote unquote normal." That doesn't mean they need to see a physio for the rest of their life. There's a lot of teens that I might talk to once just to show them, this is what the muscles look like. This is what happens in intercourse. This is what happens with pooping. This is what happens with peeing. And I teach a lot of mindfulness at the beginning. This is what it feels like to tighten those muscles. This is what it feels like to relax those muscles. I just want you to kind of notice in your day a little bit, when you need to stop pee. Do you feel that? Okay. Now, do you see how that's the opposite when you need to let pee and poop out? Let's say you're, you are sexually active with somebody and it's hurting, can I show you how to, think about relaxing those muscles for entry? Or, because there's a time and a place for tension, and most people just don't know that they have more control than they think. Any last messages, Jenny? I'm obviously going to get you, I've taken down a couple of the websites that you just mentioned, but I might get you to share a couple of resources that maybe you use over and over again that I can link in the show notes for people listening. Any last messages that you want to share for the purpose of this episode?
Just have conversations with your kids, right? Like, the car is a fantastic place to have conversations. Just little tidbits. It doesn't have to be like a formal sit down. It just find out what your kids are doing. Find out what their friends are up to, right? Have little conversations. But just keep the conversations rolling, because there's lots going on in their lives, and just try to be a part of it. Yeah.
And I think I shared this in the last episode, and I think this is a trick that I have to use all the time, is I make up a lot of stories so that it doesn't feel like I'm lecturing them, but I'll just say, all of a sudden hear something that I'm like, oh my gosh, I want my kids to hear about this. Then I usually make up stories about clients, because if I say a friend, they'll say, who, which friend? Whereas if I say it's a client, I'm like, that's confidential. But I'll just say like, oh, so-and-so came in today and, they have a 10-year-old son and this happened to them. What would you think you guys would do in that situation? Like, just as a learning experience that feels like it's not them, or that I'm talking to them, because that's just not a good entry to my kids. If as soon as I say, I want to talk to you guys about something, I feel like they plug their ears. So I have to use that's for my kids. I have to do that. I think just finding a way to get in there,
I mean, any way you can, right? I think that's a great idea.
Well, thank you so much, Jenny. I really appreciate this. I have not only learned so much as a parent, but I think I will be sharing this a lot, because this is something lots of parents stop me on in the playground and just like, okay, can I ask you something about my daughter? And I always think like, I'd like to have a resource like this that I can say, listen to this. And so now I have it, and I really thank you. I'm going to use this a lot. And that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the show, can I ask you a big favor? Would you do one of three things for me? Number one, leave a review, because we could all use a little positive feedback sometimes. Number two, download the episodes, because it helps me see what people are interested in. Or number three, share it with somebody else, because sharing is caring. Catch you next time.